It's time to get ready for the 21st Annual Concert of Colors in Midtown Detroit. This year's celebration will be from July 4th through the 7th. Be prepared for good food, great refreshments, and awesome entertainment. It will be fun for the whole family. Admission is free, so be sure to come out and enjoy the Concerts of Colors in Midtown Detroit. And for more information, go to www.concertofcolors.com.
What is that?
Oh, that? It's my time machine.
Does it work?
Sure. Just hit this button.
Whoa, dinosaurs. Cool.
Or we can go here.
Hey, that's Napoleon.
Oui.
Or we can go to the future.
Wow. Hey, you have this nice house. Do I have a nice house?
No, you didn't save any money. Always spent it on vacations and stuff.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and correct that bad habit.
Yep.
Okay, the time machine is not real, but the saving thing is. Get in the habit of putting some of your money in savings each week through a 401k, savings account, or financial investments. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy tips on saving, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
What does this crazy little button do?
Wait, no! This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Now, our guest today is Mr. Stephen Bassett. He's been on this show before, but today he has new information that just might lead to the official disclosure of the UFO phenomenon. Stephen Bassett is a political activist and the leading advocate for ending the 67-year government-imposed truth embargo, as he refers to it, regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, or PRG, which recently produced a citizen hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Stephen has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of formal disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence, and his advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. So let's welcome back to the show Mr. Stephen Bassett. Hello, Stephen.
It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I know you've done several press conferences at the prestigious National Press Club in Washington, but none like this, eh?
Yeah, this wasn't a press conference which, say, lasted for an hour or two on a single day. This was a hearing. Essentially, we brought in 40 witnesses from about 10 countries to testify before six former members of Congress on this subject, broad range of evidence. And they testified for 30 hours over 5 days. It was fully filmed and webcast and archived, and a lot more is going to be done with this footage. And so this is a very substantial event. It got pretty good coverage from the media, and will have, I think, a lasting impact. So it's never been done before either. It's an unprecedented event. We hope to do more of these, funding permitted. So this has been a bit of a breakthrough, and we'll see where it goes.
All right. Well, I guess your hopes are that it will stimulate Capitol Hill to where they'll have actual congressional hearings for sitting congressmen and women. Is that right?
Certainly. One of the audiences was the sitting Congress, which meets on Capitol Hill about 13 blocks away from where the citizen hearing was held. They had not had a hearing on this subject since 1968, the year before Blue Book was closed down by the Air Force, and the government just swept this under the rug, meaning move along, nothing to see here. That was sort of their, that was a hard response to the growing interest and awareness of the phenomena. They were being overwhelmed by that, and so they decided to shut everything down and produce the big lie, which was there's really nothing here. But this was 1968, 1969 period. The truth embargo was heavily in place. The threat of nuclear war was high and grave, and we understand why they took these draconian measures to contain this issue, because for them to have this issue fully out in the open while nuclear weapons were poised to be launched at any moment was simply an unacceptable risk to the national security, and we understand that. But, of course, the Cold War has been over 22 years now.
Yeah, you would think that, you know, like back in 47 when Roswell occurred, you could understand we had just come out of the Second World War, and, you know, everything's hush-hush. But once again, that was 47. It was then, this is now, right?
Certainly. The U.S. government in particular is going through a very difficult time right now. It's, I think, what you could say that it's being overwhelmed by the complexities of the modern world. The world continues to get more difficult to deal with. 200 nations, many emerging, and the U.S. government has tried to be the world leader in all things. It has taxed its economy through a lot of unnecessary wars. It's pushed itself to the limit, and it's breaking down. The systems are breaking down, and I include the political system, the party system, the legal system, the financial system, and people are pretty worried about that, and they're seeing this, and of course they're hoping it'll all turn around, but I wouldn't count on that. And so this is part of the many reasons that 22 years after the Cold War, they're still trying to maintain this lie, this extraordinary misrepresentation of reality, because they don't know how to deal with telling the truth.
No.
And maneuver beyond that. They don't know how to deal with a lot of things. They can't even fix the bridges and the roads here in the United States. They're falling apart literally underneath our cars. They're not able to deal with foreign issues, I think, appropriately, and they're still completely broke. So it's a tough situation, and I think another nation may have to step in and intervene here and take preemptive action and be the initial disclosure nation, because I don't know if the U.S. is capable of doing it.
Well, you know, other nations have pretty much come forward, France, Belgium, Colombia, Mexico. I was just talking to the head of MUFON, David McDonnell, just a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And, he gave a presentation here in Michigan at a MUFON meeting. And they just had a conclave in Paris, France. And a lot of leaders from around the world were there. You know, the head of France's NASA was there. Space program was there talking about the UFO phenomenon. And, you know, here in America, we get hoaxes all the time on YouTube and you name it, and UFO hoaxes. But in France, if you're caught doing a UFO hoax, you're arrested because they take it that seriously, because they know it is that serious.
Well, with respect to small d disclosure, the process of letting information out, advancing the public awareness, other countries have been pretty active since 2000, the last 13 years, France being one of them, but there are many others that are either releasing files or cooperating with ET research organizations and other matters. The U.S., of course, is held fast because it is essentially the progenitor of this embargo from the beginning. It has led the embargo from the beginning, at least within the West, the Western world, the free world, as it's sometimes called. The Soviet Union, now Russia, and the People's Republic of China had their own reasons for sitting on this, and I assume still have their own reasons for sitting on this, but again, there's more activity there, frankly, in these two countries than in the United States. So the U.S. is kind of the last, you know, I guess you could say the last liar standing in a way. But with respect to formal disclosure, the capital D disclosure, this is the announcement, this is the acknowledgement event. And people do get confused on this, and I understand. The acknowledgement of the issue, the formal acknowledgement, no country's ever done that. And so at that point, the U.S. is on the same footing. The question is, how long will that go on? I mean, the message we send to the White House repeatedly through the media is, do you honestly think that all of the other nations in the world are just going to continue to follow behind our lead here, or lack thereof, and continue to remain silent on this? They're clearly sending a different message. And I'll throw the Vatican in on this as well, which is taking a rather remarkable posture. Not remarkable, but remarkable in the context of the Catholic Church's history in the past of suppression of science when it interfered with their dogma. Now they're out in front of the parade. So the White House is making a huge mistake here, and it'll be a colossal one. I mean, there are many mistakes that governments make, and the current administration makes its share. But allowing another nation to preempt us on this will have huge long-term consequences, and certainly huge short-term consequences. Long-term, it'll even out, I suppose. But so far, they're remaining adamant that there's nothing to see here. The position of the Obama administration is there is no evidence at all for any of this.
Well, Obama, Bush, go back and back, Clinton, you name it. It has always been, there's nothing here to see. And they're just maintaining that. But how can it be when other countries come forward and say, here are our files, we understand this is real. If it's a hoax, if you perpetrate a hoax, you're going to jail because that's how seriously we take this phenomenon, then, how can you say, well, it's real in France and Mexico, but it's just fadnessy in America, you know what I'm saying?
You can say it because the truth embargo, which is now 66 years running, has sufficiently institutionalized this belief structure, particularly in the American people, the American media, and politicians, right, that they just don't pay attention or they don't respond. This is why other countries are moving forward and the U.S. is stuck. The truth embargo was practiced most heavily here. Obviously, the U.S. government got cooperation from its allies post-World War II, and they suppressed the issue, possibly outrightly denied it. They certainly weren't putting information out. But the U.S. certainly made the greatest effort to keep the American people and the American press under control, and they worked on it for decades, and they've institutionalized it so that now it's remarkable just how much, how many events and evidence can appear before the eyeballs of the American mainstream media, and they don't blink. I mean, they just stare at it like a deer in the headlights. They are covering the issue, though. I mean, they are writing articles. They're writing up what's happening. If there's a conference, they'll write it up. If there's a sighting, they'll write it up. But they don't investigate. They don't go behind the scenes, and they certainly don't challenge the government in any way.
No.
So this is the truth embargo, which is what this is all about. I mean, I just can't emphasize enough. There's so many people out there that try to understand this issue without the truth embargo. It's like, oh, no, the government's made no effort to undermine the issue or anything else. Therefore, why did this happen? Why did that happen? Mm. And of course, they'll then blame people within the field. Why hasn't this happened? Why didn't you do enough? Whatever. Failing to acknowledge that the most powerful and wealthiest government in the history of humankind has spent billions of dollars for the last 66 years to ensure this issue was contained. A significant effort, a lot of money, a lot of resources, and they succeeded. And just people won't accept that. It's very odd to me. They're infuriated over the lies that have been put forward regarding a number of issues over the last 60 years, mostly involving war, but certainly involving financial improprieties and everything else. Yeah. But when it comes to this lie, they just have a blind eye. When more people acknowledge that a full-scale propaganda program to keep this issue contained was undergone and maintained effectively for six decades, then they'll start to understand why we're at where we are. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're not going forward is fundamentally that this lie is institutionalized now, not because the ETs are threatening to blow up the world or the oil companies have got a veto power of what government does anymore, but because the embargo is literally institutionalized. And until somebody breaks it, right, somebody, and it'll be a head of state of one nation or another, breaks that embargo, then it'll be over and we'll be able to move forward. The question is who will be that person or who will be that country?
Okay, but then comes the problem. Once you say, okay, we're some of these UFOs that are being seen are truly unconventional craft. They weren't built here on this planet. Roswell was a fact. We have crashed saucers. We have alien bodies. Yada yada yada. We give out that information. Where does that information stop? I mean, there's a million questions that are going to follow that. Why can't you protect us against alien abductions? What is the alien agenda? How do they
There's
answer
a million
this?
Questions. Yeah, well, yeah. That's tough. You know, I'm so sorry. Right? I'm so sorry for the poor government that there's a million questions they're going to have to answer. Gee, right? If they don't want to answer the questions, then quit. Go home. Find another job. Don't aspire to power. Don't take money to become elected. Don't take oaths to defend the Constitution and serve the American people and then say, there's just too many questions we have to answer, so I'm just not going to do anything.
Right.
Come away. Right? Of course, American people keep electing people that won't do anything, and then they wonder why nothing gets done. So, I give a significant portion of the responsibility to the American people, which have allowed this to go on a long time, have elected all of the officials that are committing all of the improprieties have been elected by them in most cases, not all cases, some are appointed, but they elected the people that appointed them. But they won't take responsibility for that. So we need a public that will take responsibility. We need a press that will do its job. We need a Congress that will actually start doing its job. We need a president that is able to work out the necessary understandings with the military intelligence complex, which has become a major, major issue and a potential threat to the Republic, a deal that will allow this information to come forward and the president to announce the ET presence. We need all of those things. We have it. We don't have it.
Yeah, but
but we're not demanding it either.
Yeah,
not at the level that's necessary. We're still kind of in a hypnotic fog.
Yeah,
we've been hypnotized by all the BS, the propaganda, the lies, the misinformation, and we're just sort of in a fog. And you sense it. I mean, when I go outside the country, I really get that kind of feedback. They're befuddled by the American people and the way they're sort of stumbling around in the dark, going around in circles, not getting anywhere, going backward. And they're befuddled by that. They don't understand it. We have a massive education system. We had a great deal of money and funds to get things done. We have a fairly strong history. Why are we this way now? And it's an interesting question. History will, I'm sure, pay close attention to that and look at it in great detail. What happened to America? What happened to the American people? But they will and have said the same thing about what happened to the Soviet people. What happened to the people of the 14 republics that got taken in by the communist BS and its propaganda and the lies and the deception and the manipulation and went along with it, essentially from 1918 to 1991, 73 years, until the whole thing, not surprisingly, collapsed under the weight of its own malfeasance and mendacity, and they finally got out from under it. Fortunately, they didn't have to have another violent revolution with millions killed, though some of their leaders did conduct and get involved in things over those years that killed tens upon tens of millions of people. So, you know, the same thing. Right, people continue to allow themselves to be subjugated and taken down these long roads of despair, destruction, violence, lies, and without putting up much of a fight. So, you know, in a time where we don't have to take up arms to change the state, and we don't have to take up arms to get the truth, we need people to sort of, okay, fine, then let's get it. Let's stand up for it. And it's not happening. And so they get lied to about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and off we go on a $2 trillion misadventure. They get lied to about the financial institutions, and then they lose their house and their pension and their jobs. And they get lied, and they go along with the lies, and they lose this, and they lose that, and they've gone along with the lie with regard to the ET truth embargo, and so they've been missing out on that reality for all of these years and all of the potential benefits from the technology that the government almost certainly has. Well, it doesn't almost. It does have. That could be used to address the problems we face in a very difficult, complex world over diminishing resources, and on and on and on and on. I mean, I could go on for days on this, but it keeps coming down to the same thing. You either stand up for the truth or you live with the lies. And history has shown when you stand up for the truth, you make progress, and when you live with the lies, you decay, degrade, and finally, you're destroyed.
Very good. I need to take one moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here in Dearborn, Michigan. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Stephen Bassett, the head of the Paradigm Research Group and coordinator for Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. Stephen, tell us about the people, the former congressional representatives who were at this hearing. Who were they?
This had never been done before, and so it was not clear what success I would have in putting a panel together of former members of Congress. And it was a really dicey situation because there was the potential that no one would be willing to do this for any amount of money, and we would have no panel, in which case I would have a serious problem on my hands. But as it happened, we ended up with a very, very good panel, extraordinary panel, and at the end there were a few other former members that wanted to be on board, and we simply couldn't do it. We could not afford it. So we had five former members of the House and one former member of the Senate. Three Republicans, two Democrats, and a Libertarian. Three men, three women. That's
very
a pretty balanced panel.
Yeah,
more balanced than the sitting Congress.
Yeah.
Senator Gravel, a longtime truth fighter, has come on board and gotten very involved and is very committed to advancing this issue. Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick of Detroit, she was 14, served 14, let me get that right now. 14 years, yes, 14 years in the Congress. Then we have Darlene Hooley, Congresswoman from Portland. She served 14 years. Then we had Congressman Merrill Cook, two-term congressman from Utah. And then two 20-year tenured members of the Congress, Lynn Woolsey of the House, and Roscoe Bartlett, who has a Ph.D. in science. I mean, he's a very knowledgeable gentleman from Maryland. So between all six, there were 80 years of tenure in the Congress, and they did a wonderful job.
And when these people went out, I don't know what their opinions were going in, but when they came out of these few days of hearings and listened to the testimony, we're going to get into some of the testimony in a minute, but when they listened to some of this testimony, what was their opinion? Had it changed, or were they always for disclosure, or were they always pro-UFO?
Pretty much all of them came into the issue in a neutral or skeptical, somewhat skeptical frame of mind.
Mm.
Their particular opinion about this issue was not part of the selection process. They weren't even asked their opinion about this issue prior to signing on to be on the committee to hear this testimony. Within one day, they were already significantly impacted. By day three, they were profoundly impacted. And when it was over, they unanimously, I think, agreed that the evidence was powerful, convincing, and their views ran the gamut from absolutely this needs to be, there needs to be congressional hearings on this, to absolutely there's an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. And I believe that if extensive hearings, and we have hundreds of witnesses ready to testify, were held in the Congress, that the entire Congress of the United States would undergo pretty much the same transformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, based on the polling numbers that have been acquired over the last 10 years and the demographic breakdown of those numbers, on that basis alone, one could predict, I think, comfortably that half of the members of Congress right now believe that the phenomenon is real, that there's, in fact, an extraterrestrial explanation for the UFO phenomena. That doesn't mean they know much about it. It doesn't mean that they're prepared to engage it at all, but you know, that's where half the American people are, and I think that would include the Congress, so that's about 260 people. So right there, but that doesn't mean they know much. And so the transformation that took place by the committee to citizen hearing would probably be similar to what would take place in the Congress, and that would be it. I think that if the Congress were to hold about 3 weeks of hearings on this and bring in maybe 50 to 75 to 100 witnesses, the truth embargo would be over in 30 days. It would be done. I don't think it could last 30 days past those hearings.
But let's say that
the Congress has the power to end this truth embargo if it wants to.
Yeah. Let's say the Congress was as impressed as these former congressional representatives. What happens then? Do they go to the president and say, make the announcement? You know, maybe he's not in. I'm sure he's not in the loop either. Maybe Nixon was. I know Nixon was. I'm pretty sure Bush was, but Bush Senior at least. But most of them, I don't think they're in the loop. Do you?
No, but look, this is a complex national security matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a major decision on the part of government. So you know, you have to view it in less than simple terms. What would happen if the Congress held hearings is that after about 3 weeks, there would just be a media firestorm building.
Mm-hmm.
Because the coverage of these hearings would be staggering. We had some good coverage, but we would have had far more coverage except for the very tragic timing. The tragic circumstances and the concurrent timing of the bombing events in Boston.
Boston, yeah.
Those bombs went off at almost exactly the point at which the media would have been making the decisions about how much coverage they were going to give to the citizen hearing, and right. All of that disappeared. Almost all the coverage that we would have likely gotten disappeared at that point.
Yeah.
Unfortunate for us and very tragic for the victims of the bombings up
yeah.
there. But, you know, it seems like whenever we ever make a little progress in this country, somebody blows something up and then we step backward two steps. In any event, the Congress, if they held hearings, that wouldn't be a problem. And the coverage would be overwhelming. It would be staggering. And so with a media frenzy building and the issue now heating up to just white-hot temperature, what would happen is what is going to have to happen, regardless whether it's driven by a media frenzy or driven by common sense. The president is going to have to send representatives to meet with the military intelligence complex.
Mm-hmm.
Those people in the complex that can speak to this issue, and they exist, I can assure you. And they would then work a deal out where the president would be assured information, access to information that would back up a disclosure announcement, and then the president would provide the assurances to the national security complex that as to how he would proceed and how it would go forward to allay any concerns they have, to national security about disclosure. I mean, nobody can predict exactly how it's going to go, but I'm sure they have certain points and certain aspects of it they'd like to see take place. So once that deal is struck, then disclosure could happen immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be something like that.
Okay.
Right? But no, the president cannot come forward unless he knows the national security structure is going to back him up. And the very uncomfortable reality today is the president doesn't have that assurance.
No. No, I don't think so. You also, I think you mentioned that there were, or did you mention that there were sitting congressional representatives in the audience at these hearings?
No, we're not aware of any congressional members that showed up. Doesn't mean they didn't, but I don't think so.
Oh.
There might have been some staffers. But that's awkward, you see. I mean, you do that, and there's people, there's press there. Suddenly you're exposed. Why are you here? That's why we webcast it. So that members of Congress, they wanted to, through a staff member providing complete anonymity, really,
mm-hmm.
could have accessed the entire thing, watched it live, and can still access it at citizenhearing.org.
You didn't have...
Webcast, archives. And so we provided the basis for media and for members of Congress and or their staff to see this testimony in this context safely from the security of their office. And... I'm sure some of them did. Now, what they're going to do about it remains to be seen.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about some of the speakers, some of the witnesses, Richard Dolan. I'm sorry. Sorry
yes.
about that, Richard. Richard Dolan. I've seen his testimony. Give us some feel of the highlights of this. Something, an individual, and what kind of testimony he had. What he or she said.
Well, one of the things that characterized this event, as opposed to anything before it, was that we had about a third of the 40 witnesses were researchers,
mm-hmm.
people that had spent 5, 10, 15, 20, even 45 years researching these subjects and written many books. And the other two-thirds were military agency and political witnesses, the kind you've seen at a number of the press conferences that have been held at the National Press Club over
mm-hmm.
the years,
mm-hmm.
testifying to events and evidence relative, that they can speak to personally, in most cases stemming from time when they were actually in the military or in the intelligence services or, a serving politician and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one-third research component was able to, in their testimony, kind of provide a platform on which the military agency political witnesses could stand, giving them more substance.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the early part of the hearing, in the very first day, we had many of these researchers presenting to a fairly broad array of issues related to the phenomena, the history, and so forth. And this was very important. We didn't cover everything. There was a deliberate decision made not to get into the contact issue. A contact area.
Mm.
One, that's a huge area in and of itself.
When you say
extremely complicated.
When you say contact, you mean abductions?
Well, abductions is one example of contact, not
okay.
the only kind.
Okay.
But the ET contact issue, and keep that out, and pretty much we did.
Mm.
That may very well be the subject of a future citizen hearing.
Right.
But it's not needed. I mean, the presence of extraterrestrials is well-established, the evidence available, without even getting into the contact area.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, these witnesses, let me see if I can, I want to bring up a, yeah, and so in the initial section we had, in the early part, we had Richard Dolan, Grant Cameron, Stanton Friedman, Lynn Moulton Howe presenting. Now, between them, they've got, I think, my God, probably, I'm going to guess 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of research into this field. And then we also included Danny Sheehan, and then Antonio Neas and others. And they provided a pretty substantial base for the witnesses to follow, so that when these witnesses testified to more specific events, it was with the backdrop of this extensive discussion about the historical evidence. This gave a lot more substance to this event. And so in that sense, I think we succeeded. The most important panel, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of making the obvious point to any reasonable person with an IQ above 20 that this is a major issue that needs to be addressed by all levels of government and by society, was the nuclear tampering panel. Yeah. And in that case, we had four military witnesses, Captain Robert Salas, Captain Sergeant David Scott, Captain David Schindelli, and Captain Bruce Fenstermacher, and then researcher Richard Dolan. And they were talking about events where these craft, not UFOs, they're craft, right?
Right.
And in many cases, they have entities in them that are not human. I mean, that's why I really encourage people, to the extent that it's possible, and it's not always possible, to just move away from the acronym UFO. It simply doesn't apply anymore. They are identified. They're craft, and they're being piloted by non-human entities in many cases. We have our own version of these craft now, and so you might see something. It might actually be a human-made, human-piloted craft. That's fine. I get that. That's still not unidentified. It's unidentified only, we don't know who the pilots are. But in terms of what they are, it's definitely not a flock of geese, right. And it's not a Frisbee. It's a craft. And so it's not unidentified in that sense. And UFO is just an acronym of the truth embargo, maintained service by the government to keep us running around in circles chasing unidentified flying objects.
Right.
I don't chase unidentified flying objects. I address the presence of extraterrestrials in engaging the human race.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, Captain Salas, of course, testified to the Malmstrom Air Force Base incident where a craft came down, turned off all the missiles. Captain Schindelli, Sergeant Scott, supported that. Captain Fenstermacher, two of those people, by the way, is the first time they'd ever come forward. There are many, many other witnesses to this nuclear tampering. I think Robert Hastings has interviewed about 160, and his book, UFOs and Nukes, is one of the most important books ever done on this subject. So that was the most important panel. I mean, the press, if the press was doing its job, they would have watched that, and their editors would have had them already, you know, down to the briefing offices of the Pentagon, the Joint Chiefs, Office of the Joint Chiefs, as well as, of course, the White House briefing room, asking very obvious, tough questions. What about this? And, of course, they didn't do it. Another very important panel, in my view, was the Roswell panel. In that case, we brought together a number of witnesses on the Roswell panel, including top researchers in the field, Donald Smith, Stan Friedman, and Kevin Randall. We also had a military agency witness, Colonel Jesse Marcel, Jr.
Mm.
We also had his two children, fully grown, Jesse Marcel III and Denise Marcel, to testify to this issue from the perspective of being in that family and knowing both the grandfather, Marcel Sr., and their father over these many years as they've tried to speak truth on this matter, and the government, of course, has denied it all.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had Colonel Richard French, who has spoken out on this issue, and he was involved in Project Blue Book while he was working for the Air Force. So this is a very, very strong panel. And, again, Roswell was the real deal. And the biggest threat to the truth embargo of any single event or issue. And the government, therefore, has had to go to the greatest lengths to contain it. And they've barely contained the Roswell history there, but they've had to do it by the most obvious lies,
mm-hmm.
repeated and different lies at different times over the 63 years.
Well, the gentleman...
And it's probably the most embarrassing, I think, one of the most embarrassing areas of engagement of this issue is the Roswell history, because the Air Force has had to lie so blatantly. And, mm-hmm. and of course, that doesn't exactly encourage confidence in the Air Force, which, of course, was a major institution in protecting us against the Soviet Union. And so the Air Force had to lie about the nuclear tampering issues. It's lied about Roswell. And that's just corrupting. I assure you that the members of the Air Force that honorably served there don't like to be the instrument of government lies easily. Obviously, during the Cold War, it was probably easy to justify, but since the Cold War is over, I don't think they're comfortable at all with it. And and ending the truth embargo would, of course, free the Air Force up to be able to tell the truth on this matter, which I think would be good for all parties concerned.
Really. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening.
I mentioned you could hear mountains.
Mummy's the word. We don't want to disturb this fossilized pharaoh.
For fear of the curse of King Tut.
But wait, which curse do you mean? I mean, it's changed over the years.
So when King Tut was first discovered, it was all about evil spirits. But later on, by the 1970s, for example, it was all about alien technology.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College.
Is that stemming from time when they were actually in the military or in the intelligence services or, you know, a serving politician and so forth? Mm-hmm. And so the one-third, but without question, it was different lies at different times over the 63 years.
Well, the gentleman.
And it's probably the most embarrassing, I think, one of the most embarrassing areas of engagement of this issue is the Roswell history, because the Air Force has had to lie so blatantly. And, mm-hmm. and of course, that doesn't exactly encourage confidence in the Air Force, which, of course, was a major institution in protecting us against the Soviet Union. And so the Air Force had to lie about the nuclear tampering issues, it's lied about Roswell. And that's just corrupting. I assure you that the members of the Air Force that honorably serve there don't like to be the instrument of government lies easily. Obviously, during the Cold War, it was probably easy to justify, but since the Cold War is over, I don't think they're comfortable at all with it. And ending the truth embargo would, of course, free the Air Force up to be able to tell the truth on this matter, which I think would be good for all parties concerned.
Really. I need to take one more break just to... remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here at Henry Ford Community College in beautiful Dearborn, Michigan. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with the coordinator for the citizens' hearings on disclosure and the executive director for the Paradigm Research Group, Mr. Stephen Bassett. This gentleman, Stephen, that you mentioned was with Project Blue Book so many years ago. What did he have to say about Blue Book and its authenticity or lack thereof?
The same thing that quite a few others have said. It's a whitewash. It was part of the shutdown of... It was a major truth embargo maneuver on part of government.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to stem the torrent of interest in the subject that was just not going to let up, and they knew that. And so they basically came up with a plan to try to, I guess you could say, choke it off. And the plan involved, one, holding a hearing, so they could say they held a hearing. They'd already held one in 66, but they held another one in 68.
Mm.
At this hearing, Stanton Friedman was one of the people to testify, which is remarkable because Stanton Friedman, of course, is one of the researchers that testified 45 years later. Still in the research, 45 years later, at the citizen hearing on disclosure, a remarkable circle closed there. And it was also at this briefing that the very, very competent, one of the most important researchers in the entire field in history, Dr. James McDonald, testified, and they utilized this hearing to embarrass him publicly. And because he was a real threat to the truth embargo. He was going around speaking to scores and scores of meetings of scientists and engineers, giving them really good scientific analyses of the phenomena, and obviously perhaps stimulating interest in the subject within the scientific community. And he was relentless. He wouldn't stop. And he was a consultant to NICAP and working with J. Allen Hynek, and he was a serious problem. And so they tried to undermine him by humiliating him at that hearing. He was also dealing with the breakup of his marriage at the time, and so the two things together resulted in him basically breaking down, and he went home not too long after that hearing and shot himself.
Mm.
And so they hold that hearing, and then they'd also solicited the Condon Report at University of Colorado. Condon was basically tasked to come up with a debunk of the whole thing,
right?
Which we now know from the records is exactly what he did. And then with that, then closed Blue Book down after the Condon Report. So, and then shut everything down basically in 69, meaning hey, it's all done here. We're finished. We did a hearing. We did an investigation. There's nothing here. We're shutting Blue Book down. We're not in the UFO business anymore. All lies.
Yeah.
Right? But that was their gambit in 69. And it worked. The press just bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. And so consequently, the ability to advance this issue from 69 to 1991 was really undercut. And a lot of years went by before things began to pick up speed again. So they were able to buy a good 20 years from that 69 event. But eventually the truth started to catch up with them again, and they had to go through some more machinations. The emergence of Roswell, thanks to Jesse Marcel Sr., was one of the principal catalysts that started to bring the reemergence of the issue into the public mind. And, of course, a generation of reporters kind of passed, and a new group came in, maybe a little less tied to the truth embargo. And so it all started up again and led us to where we are now. But, again, I cannot tell you how impressed I am in a somewhat I don't know how to the phrase for this, but it's like the evil geniuses in movies like Bond movies or even the recent Sherlock Holmes movies, where you have to admire the genius and the competence of the quote villains. I'm very impressed with the success of this embargo, that they were able to pull it off. It's an extraordinary accomplishment.
Yeah, but and
whether it served the American people, history will decide. Whether it was the right decision, history will decide. Yeah. But without question, it was an extraordinary accomplishment.
And yet the polls show that at least 50% of this nation believes that there are intelligent beings on other planets and possibly visited
Earth. 95% of the public believe there's life somewhere in the universe.
Okay.
50% believe it's already visiting here.
That's what I was getting at. 50%
yeah,
believe.
And that's testimony of the truth embargo, because normally with that many people in that frame of mind, that would generate all of the news investigation or the news media investigation you would want.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. Now, it is the reason why the extraterrestrial genre of film and television is the most successful genre in history of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
That explains that. But the truth embargo has prevented that same level of awareness and belief to generate institutional response and change.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though half the American people believe the phenomenon is real, which, of course, is the most extraordinary information in the history of the human race, not a single college or university in the United States teaches a proper program on this subject. The Congress hasn't done a hearing in 45 years. No granting institutions provide money to this issue. Only a few individuals have done this, Robert Bigelow being probably the most, the one that's provided the most money on this issue.
Right.
The press doesn't cover it properly. So, again, the truth embargo is extraordinarily successful given these numbers. Mm-hmm. But these numbers ultimately will end that embargo. Mm-hmm. It cannot sustain itself in the face of the awareness and the belief system that now exist, but they continue to do it. And because they continue to fight against these numbers, the confidence and trust in government is one of the reasons it's collapsing.
Yeah, the trust is not there anymore.
You know, I mean, just get into a crowd of people and just say, how many people trust their government anymore, and see how many hands are raised.
Really? Really? You know, some of the cynics I've heard say about, getting back to the hearings, that these the former congressmen and women received monetary compensation for their participation. And how would you answer them on that?
The answer is grow up.
Right? Okay.
All those research scientists that are trying to discover the nature of the universe.
Didn't right? they get paid?
They're all paid. All the sitting members of Congress that are basically sitting there doing nothing but are supposed to be able to gather information in the hearings they hold, they're all paid.
Right.
The truth costs money. Lies you get for free.
Right.
And the American people need to grow up and realize if they want the truth, they're going to have to pay for it. They're going to have to support it. Instead, they want it handed to them, and that's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, the cynics are trying to, and I don't call them skeptics, I'm the skeptic, you know, the cynics are saying, implying that, you know, if you pay a guy a few thousand dollars to come and sit and listen to this testimony, you will find in the favor of this testimony. But not the case, is it?
Yeah, they got opinions. It's a free country, they're welcome to them, but they don't understand the nature of things. They don't understand the way things work.
So for the record, there was no deal that, you know, I pay you and you go in and you find in my favor, right?
Oh, God, no. The witnesses were essentially, I mean, there were some guidelines that were provided, but the witnesses weren't told what to say, and the committee wasn't told who to believe. If a real hearing was held in Congress, it would go the same way.
Yeah.
Look, there are cynics that will challenge anything. I get it. And the Internet, they all get a chance now to do that. But we can only waste so much time addressing their concerns. We have to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you something. The people that pursue the truth, and I've studied some of the activist movements, lead lives of such modesty and with so little money.
Mm-hmm.
And usually make such huge sacrifices, while the liars in our society are wealthier than God, right? And if people can't figure that out, I feel sorry for them.
That is true. I mean, I'm not getting paid to do this show. You're not getting paid to do this show.
But if I was,
yeah,
if I was being paid $100 or a couple hundred dollars, so what?
Really?
My God.
Your time is valuable.
I mean, this is ghetto stuff. This is part of the intellectual ghetto.
Yeah.
Where you ghettoize people and you ghettoize the issue through the mechanisms of the truth embargo, and you get everybody biting at each other's ankles and looking at issues like that, while the big lie just continues on like a juggernaut. I understand. I have some empathy. People have been frustrated and denied for a long time, and they don't know what to do, and they can't challenge the state. And so instead of, you know, getting fully behind those that do challenge the state, they bite at their ankles. I understand. I get it. It's part of the deal. Believe me, the Paradigm Research Group has got a huge number of supporters out there that outnumber their critics by thousands to one.
Right. And it's things like that the magician's trick, you know, watch my right hand so you don't know what my left hand is doing. It's a diversion. A diversion from
well, it's part of it. Look, every activist movement has had plenty of critics and been attacked from every conceivable angle.
All right.
And you can bet that a lot of the people that were doing that were doing because they opposed the goal of the advocacy movement. Mm-hmm. Look, one of the things is going to happen and is happening right now as we approach disclosure is you're going to get maybe for the first time a better glimpse of who really is in favor of the truth coming forward and who isn't, right? Because as we get closer, those that are opposed are going to have to be more obvious.
That's true.
More in the open about that opposition in one way or another. And so there will be some clarity there. Because there are still people, there are people that are opposed to this. They don't want disclosure. They don't want disclosure on anything. I mean, they like secret government. They like opaque government. They have contempt for the citizens' right to know. And so they oppose it, and they'll oppose it in any number of ways. They'll criticize anything you do that could advance the issue forward, and they'll attack you personally and so forth. But that is true of every activist movement that's ever happened, and it will be, I'm sure, the case going forward. And so you get in this business, you get in the speak truth to power business, then you'd better have a thick skin.
Right. So has any of the congressional panel members already taken further further action in an effort to get that this matter to a formal congressional hearing?
Well, you know, they signed a communique encouraging the Citizen Hearing Foundation, which we've created to do more of these citizen hearings, to also raise the funds to pursue a U.N. resolution for a world conference. And we are going to do that, but we're still cleaning up the aftermath of the citizen hearing itself.
What does that mean?
And as soon as we get that squared away, we're going to start raising funds for the citizen hearing, and we'll see if people are willing to support that. But it's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Unlike anything else PRG has done in the past, this is a nonprofit 501c3, and people will be able to donate and receive tax deductions. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be a website up on that pretty soon. And yes, they are supportive of that. They signed the agreement. They signed the communique.
Mm-hmm.
And they may do more, but, you know, they weren't asked to do more than that, and they've already done a lot. They also signed a letter in support of Jim Penniston and John Burroughs' quest to get their medical records because of things that have happened to them during the Bentwaters case, the Bentwaters incident.
Right.
And they've been denied those records because they're classified, oddly enough. And so they all signed, five of them signed, and one said that she would, Congresswoman Hooley said she'd contact the VA directly to say, why are you holding these records back? I mean, so they have tried to do some things there, but they weren't asked to become, warriors in the disclosure movement.
Mm.
Mike Revelle, I definitely think, wants to do more, but he's involved in some things right now and traveling. But, you know, it's okay. We needed time to regroup. That event was unbelievably difficult and very taxing. It nearly broke me, I'll tell you.
Really?
We're still cleaning up the financing and other matters, but we're not going anywhere. We've got 30 hours of amazing footage. We're working on DVD projects, Blu-ray projects. Also, we have a documentary that's, you know, in development. We've got about 70% of the filming done and so forth. But we're going to need more funding to drive this forward without question. We're going to have to reach out, and we'll do that. But we need a little bit more time.
Very good. So what do you hope will be the outcome of these mock hearings?
Well, the citizen hearing was simply one more but major activist move in the chess game for playing with the government. And I believe that it had significant impact that we still don't fully probably know the full impact of that hearing. And we haven't fully capitalized on the citizen hearing yet.
Yeah.
But the goal of the citizen hearing and everything else that's going on now, right, documentaries, press conferences, books, it's all the same goal. The United States government is going to have to acknowledge the extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race.
Mm.
They're going to have to do that. Just like the Catholic Church eventually had to say, we're sorry we burnt people at the stake and killed people, because they just wanted to tell the truth about the solar system.
Right.
Like the Catholic Church thought they were going to get away with that for a very long time, didn't they? And they did, actually.
They sure did.
The
yeah.
suppression of the Copernican Revolution actually lasted longer than the truth embargo. but that was, you know, the 1600s. This is the 21st century.
That's right. That is right.
And there is a consummate hubris now attached to this embargo. An unbelievable hubris and arrogance that a few select individuals with fairly narrow backgrounds are the only ones that can possibly know about the ET presence, because the rest of us are just potted plants who would wilt under the terrible, awful truth that they might have to reveal. This arrogance is behind every misadventure and all of the destruction that's ever been conducted by human beings for the last 10,000 years. And if we don't move beyond it pretty soon, we are going to destroy everything that we have, including the very planet that we live on. Hubris and arrogance, as the Greeks clearly pointed out thousands of years ago, is the scourge of the human condition. Mm. And so what can I say? The truth embargo now is the poster child for it.
Right.
It's not the only poster child. There are a few others.
So you do plan on having other hearings?
If we get the funding, if funding comes into the Citizen Hearing on Foundation, you betcha. Yeah. We're going to have more citizen hearings.
So where can, for right now, where can our listeners go to find out more about the hearings?
Well, right now, if they go to citizenhearing.org,
Right.
They can click on the foundation link, and they will be taken to a simple page that gives the mission statement and also the address where they can contact us regarding funding of the foundation. We will very soon have a website up for the Citizenry Foundation, and we may do some crowdfunding campaigns there for particular projects and what have you. You may see that there. But now this foundation is under submission, meaning we have filed for the status. We haven't gotten it. So any donations that come in, if we fail to get 501(c)(3) status, then those donations will not be tax deductible, or they will be returned to the gifter. But still, we're setting up the foundation,
but it looks
and that
pretty...
will be the basis on which to fund future citizen hearings.
Looks good at this time for the nonprofit.
Who knows? Who knows? It's up to the American people.
Yeah.
Whether they want to fund these efforts or not, I can assure you they're not at this point. We have the backer that made it possible to have that funded a film production deal, not a grant, but a film production deal that made this event possible was Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a U.S. citizen.
Okay.
American people are still in a fog, a hypnotic trance almost, in which they're allowing their freedoms to be taken from them, their country to be taken from them, dysfunction to grow, systemic, dysfunction to grow, and they simply don't know what to do. And I empathize, but ultimately the people are responsible for the country they live in.
Yeah.
And they've got more freedom than most countries. I used to be able to say they have more freedom than every country. That's no longer the case. But they still have a lot of power and influence, and they have the internet at their disposal. And no citizen group has ever had that. And so they're either going to snap out of it or sail over the cliffs, over the falls, and let history, figure out how that's going to work out. I don't know, but they need to wake up at some point and decide: are we going to support the truth, or are we just going to sit back and accept the lies?
Mr. Stephen Bassett, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I wish we had more time, but hopefully we'll be able to get back with you again, okay?
Yes, thank you, David.
And thank you. Bye-bye. If you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m.